Welcome to another episode of the Deborah Health Report, where we dive into current health and medical topics to keep the Delaware Valley informed and updated. The conversation continues with Deborah Heart and Lung Center interventional cardiologist Mohammed Rasa, MD, about diagnosing and treating valvular heart disease, the high-tech present of minimally invasive care at Deborah Heart and Lung Center, and the exciting future in the heart valve research space. Here's Rasa Kay.
Hi, I'm Rasa Kay. We continue our discussion of heart valve disease with Deborah interventional cardiologist Dr. Mohammed Rasa, with more specifics on the amazing technology at Deborah to repair or replace a faulty heart valve without open surgery, even on the notoriously hard-to-reach mitral valve. That was then, this is now. Here's Dr. Rasa.
Coming to the management of valvular heart disease, the traditional way to repair or replace a valve was with open heart surgery, which means that, you know, patient will be intubated under general anesthesia, will be put on heart pump machine, the chest will be cut open, and then the surgeon will go in and get to the valves by cutting the heart muscle or tissue, and then putting a new valve in or repairing it. In this day and age, thanks to the technological advancement, we can repair or replace the valve minimally invasively. We can place a small catheter in the groin, and from that small catheter, which is few millimeter in size, we can go all the way into the heart, and then either we repair it or replace it. The replacement of the valve or transcatheter therapy in general, which means repairing or replacing the valve through a catheter in the groin without open heart surgery, this revolutionized with a procedure called TAVR, which is transcatheter aortic valve replacement, the left side exit valve, aortic valve, that's stenosis. We can replace it with a valve from the groin. That's called TAVR procedure. That's how we learned that we could replace or repair the valve from the groin. So it depends which valve. The aortic valve replacement is generally easier one, straightforward one. However, at our center, we specialized in more advanced procedures on the aortic valve. We can perform all kinds of fancy procedures to split the aortic valve leaflets with the wire from the groin, minimally invasively again, do similar procedures on the mitral valve. We are one of the very few centers in this entire region that has expertise to that level. The aortic valve replacement in general is relatively straightforward or simpler. We're usually done with the procedure itself within half an hour, whereas the mitral valve repair or replacement is a bit more challenging because mitral valve has more complex structure, which is the leaflets. There are cords underneath, so think of two half umbrellas, two half parachutes, and there could be multiple reasons why the valve is dysfunctioning. So to repair the mitral valve, it is more engaging, more involved, and you need general anesthesia, you need transesophageal echocardiogram, so imaging of the valve at the time of repairing. And the way we repair is by placing a clip where the valve is dysfunctioning. Wherever the valve is leaking, we can place that clip on that valve and stop the leak right there. So that's more involved than the aortic valve replacement. And then coming to tricuspid valve, which we've been repairing for the last several months. We're one of the busiest centers in this region. And that is even more involved, which means that instead of now dealing with two leaflets, we have three or four leaflets to deal with. So it's challenging in that regard, but again, thanks to technology, we have excellent results on those patients, and we are able to repair that valve also from the groin. It usually takes about an hour or two at the most, and patient is able to go home next morning.
And pulmonic valve?
So fortunately, pulmonic valve in general is not as problematic in senior patients. It's more of a problem in younger patients or pediatric patient population. But we have certain patients who had pulmonic valve repair or replaced when they were kids, and then we are able to go in and replace the valve from the groin, you know, later on. And we have done several of those procedures. And in general, predominant valve repair or replacement is on the other three valves I mentioned.
How delicate are heart valves, or are they tougher than we think?
So, you know, this is a great question. The valves, keep in mind, the heart is pumping blood 24/7. We are resting, asleep, the heart is working. the left bottom chamber of the heart, called left ventricle, is constantly, all the chambers are working, but the blood pressure we see, the forward flow, our circulation in our body, we feel is all coming from the left bottom chamber of the heart, called left ventricle. That left ventricle is generating a blood pressure systolic of about 120, 130. You know, that is a lot of pressure. And one way to feel how much pressure that is, if you place a blood pressure cuff on your arm, and you, when you go to a doctor and we are checking blood pressure, you'll see how hard it's squeezing on the arm to check the blood pressure. And the heart is pumping against that kind of pressure. So there's a lot of pressure on these valves because the valves have to make sure the blood doesn't go backwards or doesn't leak backwards. So to answer your questions, these valves are much tougher, stronger than somebody would think. You know, in a minute, as heart is beating like 70 times, think about in an hour, in a day, and over the lifespan of a patient, there's a lot of beating that goes on these valves, but the valves last for so long. So fortunately, these are very sturdy valves. They do great job. It's in nature's most complex, intricate structures in our bodies, and they're pretty tough.
The treatments, now you talk about valve repair and replacement. When you repair, like going to the dentist and getting the calcium scraped off?
So when we are repairing through a catheter, we go in, and if it's leaking, we are identifying where the leak is happening. And then we have this very sophisticated clip, and that clip is placed wherever the leak is coming. So we are not touching the calcium. We're just repairing where the problem is, and that takes care of the problem for a leaky valve. When we are replacing it, we are altogether putting in a new valve. So through the catheter in the groin, we go in and we deliver a new valve inside the old valve. So the new valve takes over the function of the old valve, and then old valve becomes irrelevant. So that is when we do the replacement. Perfect example is the TAVR procedure, where we replace the aortic valve. We implant the new valve inside the old valve, and then the new valve starts functioning right away.
Yeah, this is where the door and the doorway metaphor doesn't serve anymore.
Yeah.
Because generally you got doors that aren't working or the doorway is messed up. You're not leaving the old equipment there.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
In this,
exactly.
you literally are.
Yeah.
You're not pulling out an old valve.
We don't have to, fortunately, because if we have to pull out an old valve, that requires open heart surgery. So when we're working through the groin, the size of the catheter is a limited size of the catheter. We can take it up all the way to the heart. And when we put a new valve inside the old valve then becomes completely irrelevant. It has, like, for example, in the aortic valve, there are sinuses around the aortic valve. It's almost like a parking space. So when we put a new valve in, we displace the old valve into that space, and the new valve is now functioning. The old valve is not relevant anymore. Have we modified our valves to be able to put the new valve in? And that is where I mentioned the Basilica procedure, that we have performed several procedures like that at our center, Deborah Heart and Lung. And in that particular procedure, we are modifying the old valve. So we can do that by electrifying a wire and splitting the leaflet so that we can place a new valve inside that.
And the old leaflets will still just get pushed to the side.
Pushed to the side, yes.
There's variations depending on what you find when you get in there.
Correct.
How do you know what you're going to find when you get in there? Is the ultimate revelation when you finally get in with the catheter? Or do you have a visualization beforehand?
So when we do diagnostic tests like echocardiogram, ultrasound of the heart, we do transesophageal echocardiogram, which means there's a scope that goes through your throat and we can get close to the heart valves and assess the valve function by procedure called TEE, transesophageal echocardiogram, or CAT scan. All these imaging modalities guide us what to expect when we go in. So we already know what's happening with the valve before we go in. And that actually is the key part of our decision-making. Are we gonna repair it? Are we gonna replace it? Going in, we already have a game plan. What are we gonna do with this valve?
Are there treatments available short of going in pharmaceutical? Is there any kind of behavior modification that, you know, if you fix your diet, will the calcium deposits reduce? I mean, what treatments available at every stage?
And that's the question we get asked all the time. So when I explain to my patients that your aortic valve has a lot of calcium on it, the first thing they say is, well, maybe we took too much calcium. In general, all the behavioral modifications or a diet has no impact on the valvular function to our knowledge up to this point. You know, when we disclose to a patient that your valve is leaking or it's not opening well, this is the first question they ask, what can I do different? What I did wrong in the past? So the valvular heart dysfunction happens from, in our patient population in this country, is predominantly by wear and tear. Why are one patient's valve wear and tear more than another patient's valves? This is completely unknown. And a lot of research is happening to understand what caused that. Now the question, can we slow the progression of disease? So let's say we have aortic valve stenosis and it's in the mild range. What can we do different to make sure it doesn't get severe? A lot of research is happening. Nothing is conclusive, but we will know what are the different therapies that we can do to minimize the progression of aortic valve disease. On the mitral valve disease or tricuspid valve disease, which is predominantly the regurgitation or the leaky valves, in general, a good blood pressure control, losing weight, minimizing salt, exercising, these indirectly could minimize the dysfunction of these valves. And we do counsel our patients that all of the above, with in particular blood pressure control, may slow the progression of a leaky valve. All of our patients, we do recommend after valve repair and replacement to go to cardiac rehab and work with them to get back to their usual lifestyle, because the goal of doing all this is to make a patient feel better, get back to the activities they wanted to do or enjoy doing. We don't just focus on repairing or replacing a valve, but we also want to make sure after that, their symptoms are gone, they're back on their feet, they're doing what they wanted to do. So all those patients, after the procedures, they almost always go to cardiac rehab, depending the duration, maybe a week, 2 weeks, 6 weeks, it depends how well the patient is doing.
What are the most dire consequences then of not treating a leaky valve?
When the valve is in the severe range, it means it needs to be addressed sooner than later. If the valve goes unnoticed, if a patient has, you know, been saying, well, this is not the valve, it is allergies, age, and we do, unfortunately, we do see a lot of patients who didn't pay attention, didn't go to see their doctors in time, and now the valve dysfunction is so progressed, and secondarily, the heart function has gone down so much that repairing a replacement is not an option anymore. So that's why it's so important to get to the valve disease in the right time frame so it could be relatively easier repaired and replaced.
So you're talking about the stages. You've got mild, where you're going to monitor. Mm-hmm. Moderate?
So moderate is in the middle. Again, predominantly we can monitor. So depends like on the tricuspid and mitral valve disease, mild and moderate. We can monitor and watch for the symptoms, see how the valve dysfunction is progressing. In the aortic valve stenosis space, it's only indicated to replace the valve when it's severe. However, we are doing research now that should we wait for the valve to go to severe range, secondarily affecting the heart function, causing remodeling, which means that heart is now has to pump against this valve, which is not opening the way it should open, even in the moderate range. But we are doing an investigation. We're doing research on it. We are one of the centers offering that research, and we have enrolled several patients. And it's yet to be seen that in the moderate range, do we need to replace the aortic valve or leave it alone? And that we're going to have to wait for the research to complete.
But if you've got severe valve disease, it could kill you. It what leads to heart failure, throws a clot. Talk us through the nightmare scenario.
Yeah. So if the valve disorder is in the severe range, it can affect you by causing all the symptoms we discussed earlier, more and more shortness of breath, more and more fatigue and tiredness, more and more leg swelling, and all of this obviously signs of heart failure. And these symptoms and heart failure could advance to the level the patient has to be hospitalized and then needed more aggressive IV medications to pull the fluid out. And that could lead to a stage where, unfortunately, the heart function gets so weak that we are unable to repair and replace, and ultimately the patient will die.
Is there a family connection? If mom had leaky valves, is that something you need to watch out for? And
there is increased prevalence of some of the valve disorders, like a leaky valve, where the valve is prolapsing, which means the valve is not able to shut as watertight seal as it should. And in those patients, there's some family predisposition. And the same thing is on the aortic valve stenosis. There's something called bicuspid aortic valve. So aortic valve has three leaflets. In some patients, about 1 to 2% of the population, there are two leaflets. And those valves tend to fail early, and they do run families. So in those patients, we do recommend to the family members to get checked because they could have a similar condition. But vast majority of them don't have family predisposition.
What about clinical studies? Any of that going on here? You talked about research.
Yeah. So we have several clinical research trials. We are one of the leading institution in the region in regards to different trials we are looking into. So one of the trial I mentioned is called EXPAND-2, which means we are looking at valve stenosis in the aortic space that is not bad enough. It's in the moderate range. And should we replace that valve? And we are investigating that in that trial. We have a trial where we place a device inside the coronary sinus, and that indirectly affects the mitral valve leakiness. It's called the EMPOWER trial. We are participating in that. There is another trial which is looking at should we place a ring structure underneath the mitral valve. And that's also, again, through a catheter in the groin. And would that change the geometry of the left bottom chamber of the heart indirectly then or later on preventing some of the valvular dysfunction or worsening of the LV dysfunction? And that's called Corsange trial, and we are participating in that. We are looking at several other trials in the valvular space that we are going to be participating. So far, our patients who have more advanced or severe disease, we have all the therapies to help them. And the patients who are on the fence or borderline, we're doing investigation and trial. They could be considered or screened for those trials. And if they're interested, we'd be happy to get them in.
AI and predictive analytics, how do you see them affecting valve disease care?
I think, as you know, AI is disruptive in many fields and is definitely very much needed and it's be very helpful to eliminate some of the guesswork from a patient's perspective. What is this likely? Is this my heart? Is it something else? There are several artificial intelligence tools being studied in the valvular heart disease space or cardiac space in general to help and diagnose the problem early on, that you don't have to wait until patient has symptoms. When the valve dysfunction has progressed to that degree, now there is a lot of damage that has already happened to the heart muscle. So could we pick off that early on, or either we slow the progression of the valve disease, or we get to fix it early so the heart function is preserved and there's less damage to the heart? And I think that's where artificial intelligence may help by looking at other modalities, for example, chest x-rays, which many patients undergo for different reasons, EKGs, almost anybody who comes to a cardiology office has an EKG. Can we look at EKG patterns and predict this patient has underlying valve disease? So that way, by doing that simple test, we can alert the patient that we may want to investigate your valves further with an echocardiogram so we can catch the disease early. I think that artificial intelligence would definitely help in that stages and also in helping us to have more improved technologies to repair or replace the valve where artificial intelligence could guide even the procedures. I think there's a lot of excitement in that space to apply artificial intelligence in all of these areas as I discussed.
Do you see a role for robotics in valve disease care?
Yeah, so in the surgical space where robotic mitral valve repair is being done worldwide now, and there has been recent robotic procedures where the surgeons were in the U.S. and they perform robotic repairs elsewhere in the world purely through the robotics and operating through the computer, pretty much. So could this continue to evolve that me being at Debora can operate in a robot somewhere else in the country or the world and be able to repair a valve? I think it's very possible, but we're not quite there yet.
Other new devices or procedures for valve repair that have piqued your interest?
I think right now there's a lot of excitement on the tricuspid valve, which is traditionally been called a forgotten valve. This is the valve on the right side of the heart, between right upper and lower chamber of the heart. Forgotten valve because we didn't pay much attention to this valve for multiple reasons. One was that we were too focused on fixing and repairing the valves on the left side of the heart, which was causing a lot more symptoms than the right side of the heart. And also to repair or replace the tricuspid valve, the only way was traditionally open heart surgery. So now with more awareness and imaging of the tricuspid valve, and also realizing that a lot of patients have symptoms from the tricuspid valve, which are predominantly fatigue and tiredness and leg edema, we are able to repair the tricuspid valve through a catheter in the groin the same way we do on the left side. We can replace the tricuspid valve also from the groin without open heart surgery. And that is absolutely revolutionary because patients are feeling better, their tiredness and fatigue is improved, if not gone, and they go home next day. I think this is very exciting for those patients because keep in mind this was a large number of patients with that valve dysfunction. There was no therapy for them. So we are very much working on in that space. I think the next exciting is going to be doing more and more valve replacement of the mitral valve from the groin or through a catheter. And a lot of research is happening in that space also, whether we repair or replace. So I think for the patients, for our medical community, this is very exciting times.
Do you see heart valve disease treatment as more life-saving or more quality of life-saving?
It's both. So definitely improvement of quality of life. By replacing aortic valve, we have shown that people live longer. In the mitral and tricuspid space, we definitely know up till this point that we have improved patients' symptoms, and we expect that's going to also improve survival. So in general, valvular heart disease repair or replacement improves symptoms on most of the patients, but also improve survival. Most important is that if you have any symptoms, you should seek medical attention. Do not ignore your symptoms. In regards to how you can prevent some of the valve dysfunction, healthy lifestyle, walking, exercising on a daily basis, eating healthy, that directly or indirectly will help the valve disease from progression if there is underlying disease. Once the valve disease is diagnosed, a patient should regularly see their cardiologist and keep an eye on it, keep monitoring them, and make sure we do catch the time when the valve should be repaired or replaced so it's not gone to the last stage.
That's Debora interventional cardiologist Dr. Mohammad Raza. Join us for our next podcast when we'll investigate a health issue you or someone you care about needs to understand. As always, it drops the first Wednesday of the month. I'm Rasa Kay.
You can always listen to all of the informative Debora Doctor interviews at DeboraHealthReport.com. Schedule an appointment at DemandDebora.org.